You at this worship service, and delighted that we're able to get together like this and worship God according to His will and His word. The Philistines asked, "What shall we do with the Ark of God?" They asked this question in 1 Samuel chapter 6. This is a passage, 1 Samuel chapters 5 and 6, that I'd welcome your attention to. I want to look at it with you this morning. The Philistines ask, "What shall we do with the Ark of God?" I have a picture of this thing. It's on the screen behind me. This is not a trinket. The children of Israel unfortunately treated this Ark of God as a trinket. In 1 Samuel chapter 4, that's a chapter that we've studied together some short time ago, the children of Israel are in an entrenched battle with the Philistines, and things are getting bad. They're going from bad to worse, and at some pivotal juncture in this battle with the Philistines, the children of Israel say, "Quick, hurry, go get the Ark of the Covenant." And they seem to have thought that the simple presence of this Ark would be a lucky charm for them, or it would kind of magically make things better for them. We talked about that when we studied that chapter, about how sometimes people have that trivial of a view of God, that it's some sort of magic, cure-all, get better instantly kind of thing. And really, our relationship with God is much more in depth than that, should be much more in depth than that. This Ark of God is not a trinket, though the children of Israel maybe treated it as such. This represented God's presence with the children of Israel, and that may spark a question as to why the Philistines are asking what they should do with the Ark of God. If this Ark represented God's presence with the nation of Israel, what are the Philistines doing with it? What are they doing talking about this Ark of the Covenant of God? Well, in that battle that we mentioned, 1 Samuel chapter 4, this Ark is captured by the Philistines in a very terrible defeat and demoralizing defeat. Israel not only loses the battle, but they lose custody or possession of the Ark of the Covenant. And so now the Philistines are in possession of it, and that's where we pick things up in 1 Samuel chapter 5. The Ark of the Covenant in possession of the Philistines sticks out kind of like a sore thumb. The Philistines, they don't know what to do with it. They have this Ark in 1 Samuel chapter 5, verse number 1-2, they treat it, the Philistines that is, they treat this Ark just like any other idol, which, by the way, is kind of what Israel was doing in chapter 4, treating this highly important symbol of God's presence with them like a trinket or like an idol. That's kind of what the Philistines do. The children of Israel should have known better. The Philistines definitely did not know any better. And we've talked before about 1 Samuel chapter 5, where the Philistines take this Ark and they place it in a shrine with other gods, including Dagon. You see that there in 1 Samuel chapter 5, verses 3 and 4. And one by one, Dagon, their god, one of their gods, he fell and smashed into pieces the following day. The Ark of God was much more powerful than these idol Philistine gods. And here, God is making His presence known in the nation of the Philistines. And He is communicating through these events where their idol gods are tipping over, falling down, breaking. God is communicating to these folks that He is unlike any other god. God is not an idol god. Not only that, but if you look at 1 Samuel chapter 5, verse 6, the hand of the Lord is heavy against the Philistine people here. And the Lord strikes them with tumors, the Bible says. Verse number 9 says, these tumors came and broke out all over the people. We're looking at the New King James Version for Bible Bowl purposes. And 1 Samuel chapter 5, verse 9 says, these tumors affected men, small and great. It didn't matter about a person's stature in society. These tumors broke out all on them. The King James Version says that these tumors broke out in their secret parts. And I have a picture for you. No, I'm just kidding. That got your attention, though, huh? I'll let you imagine. I'll let you imagine what's going on here. This plague of these tumors, New King James Version calls them. Hemorrhoids, the King James Version calls them. The pain and suffering and discomfort was such that they thought they were going to die. Look at chapter 5, verse 10. They thought that they were going to die, that Israel, the God of Israel, is going to kill us. They cry out to heaven, verse number 12. Now, we all know how a man's pain tolerance is. It's pretty high. It's really, really up there. And these folks here were brought to their knees. You know, they were crippled with these discomforting tumors that the Lord strikes upon them, and the Lord is making His presence known definitely among the Philistine nation, such that they don't want the Ark of God anymore, and they say in chapter 5, verse number 8 here, what shall we do with this ark? They ask it again in chapter 6, verse 2, what are we going to do with this ark? They call together their own assortment of priests and diviners, their people who are kind of spiritually attuned, or so they thought. And they ask their council of experts, what do we need to do with this ark of the Lord? Tell us how we send it to its place. We don't want this thing anymore, chapter 6, verse 2 says. And so their priests, they assemble and they say, don't send back the ark of the Lord empty, verse 3. There are a lot of layers of lessons in here for us. But I love and I hate at the same time. It's both invigorating and sad. That the Philistines, they have a respect for God that is admirable. The Philistines, in whose presence this ark now is, they have a respect for God that seems to be greater than the respect that God's own people has for Him. And that's a problem. Definitely, that's a problem. One of the reasons why we're here in 1 Samuel chapters 5 and 6, with Israel losing a demoralizing defeat, their ark is gone, their relationship with God is severed. It's symbolically significant that the ark, which represents God's presence with His people, is no longer with His people. God is upset with the nation of Israel big time. And a symbol of that upsetness that God has with His people is that this ark is no longer in their possession. And here we see that the Philistines, they have respect and reverence for God. These are polytheists. These people have many different gods. They have five gods. Verse number 4 says they have five gods. The Philistines loved these five gods. Verse number 18 mentions them again. They're five lords. So they didn't serve a single god, and they certainly didn't serve the God, but they have notable respect for God. And Philistine priests and diviners say, don't send back this ark empty. And so what happens next is pretty interesting. And certainly of interest to those of us who are digging into the details of this so that we can be ready for Bible Bowl questions. The Philistines, they make five. Five was their number. Five gods they had, verse 18 says, chapter 6, verse 18. They made five golden tumors and five golden rats. Apparently, rats were also a part of what God was doing against the Philistines. His hand was heavy against them, chapter 5, verse 6 says. God was inflicting them with various plagues. We got a quick report of the tumors, and then the rats here are mentioned in chapter 6, verse 4. We don't exactly know what they might have been up to or what other ways God might have been smiting these people. But he's definitely making his presence known. And these Philistines, they're acknowledging God, which is noteworthy. These Philistines want to be respectful to God. At the first level, these Philistines want all this stuff to stop, right? But they see that a way to appease God, Israel's God, they would call him, the way to appease Israel's God is through sacrifices and through gestures of servitude. So they make these five golden tumors, these five golden rats. They get ready to send this ark along with these gifts back to Israel. Look at chapter 6, verse 6. This is what I'm talking about. In chapter 6, verse 6, these diviners, these priests among the Philistines, they say, "Don't harden your hearts as did the Egyptians and Pharaoh who hardened their hearts." Don't make the same mistake that previous people have made in their response to God. So God is known. God is known in this ancient world. And these Philistines have heard about Israel's God. They've heard about what happened with Pharaoh in Egypt. And they are using that as a lesson for themselves. It's always phenomenal to me when we see ungodly people apply bits of the Bible, sometimes better than God's people do, right? Sometimes better than God's people do. I remember visiting a little suit shop in Alamo, Tennessee. And I was talking to the man there. I was buying a suit. Somebody was buying a suit for me. And me and the person working there at the shop, we were talking, and he mentioned to me about his girlfriend, and he said, "You know, we're living together," and then he said, he knew I was a preacher, probably why he said this, he said, I know we shouldn't be, but we are. And I was thinking, I didn't say a word, you know, I didn't preach him a lesson, I didn't do anything. I didn't have a Bible with me. I didn't study the Bible with him. He knew that he was doing something that he shouldn't be doing. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, there are members of the church who don't know that lesson as well as you right now in this suit shop in Alamo, Tennessee, know that lesson. So here, the Philistines, they're learning from Pharaoh and his hard-heartedness. They are learning that lesson better than the children of Israel, God's own people, are. God's own people should have learned this lesson, that they don't need to be obstinate and stubborn in their relationship with God. That was Pharaoh's problem. Pharaoh heard about God from a very meek yet a very strong Moses, great leader of Israel. Exodus chapter 5, verse 1, Moses marches right into Pharaoh's house, and he says, "Let my people go." Moses speaks for God and says, "Let my people go." You remember Pharaoh's response? I can picture Pharaoh comfortably seated on a throne, opulence all around. I don't know how the scene played out, but in my mind, I think of it in those terms. Pharaoh was the man, I mean, the guy. And he owned all of this. And here comes Moses, his adoptive grandson, but still Moses, nonetheless. He doesn't have any rights to anything. And Moses comes in and Moses says to Pharaoh, you, buddy, you listen up there on that golden throne in this palace. You listen to God and you let God's people go. And Pharaoh says, Who is the Lord? You got to be kidding me. You're coming in this palace that I own, in this kingdom that is my jurisdiction, and you're telling me that I need to do something? No way. Pharaoh was hard-hearted. He was prideful. A lot of people today commit the same sin that Pharaoh does. When a preacher or an elder or a Bible class teacher or a concerned Christian friend or loved one says, hey, you need to live a different kind of life. You need to put God first. You need to attend all the services of the church. You need to dress a certain way. You need to do that. There are a lot of people who hear that today, and they're just like Pharaoh, and they say, what? You're telling me what to do. Get out of here. Hush that talking. I've had a lot of people tell me that before. Telling me how I'm supposed to live. Who is God? They may never phrase that question that way, but that's what they're asking. Who is the Lord? Telling me that I need to live my life this way or that way, that I need to do what the Bible says, that I'm guilty of some wrongdoing, that I'm needing to be rebuked or reproved. Who is the Lord? Some Christians today, all these years later from Pharaoh, ask. Well, these Philistines, God love them, they learned a few things. They're not where they need to be. But here, they seem to be more willing to please God than Israel does. Check that out. The Philistines say, hey, we're not going to harden our hearts. We're going to make these five golden tumors, these five golden rats. We're going to send this ark right back to where it belongs in Israel. And they devised a pretty interesting method for doing that. They took some milking cows, verse number 7 says, which had never been yoked before, and they took the calves of these cows. These were mama cows, and they had never been yoked before like this. And they put them together in a team. These cows were drawing a trailer, and on that trailer had the Ark of the Covenant. And the calves were separated from the moms, and the moms went on their way, lowing as they went, verse number 12 says. What's the big deal about this? Well, these mama cows would not naturally leave their baby somewhere else and abandon their babies. That's not what a mom does. You know, you don't abandon your children. And so these mama cows, they were without their children. And you know, more than anything, these cows wanted their children. They had never been yoked before, and yet they knew exactly what to do. That was the sign to the Philistines that God was behind all of this. These mama cows who wanted to be with their children, who had never been yoked before, are put together in some sort of bizarre team to drive a trailer back to Israel with the Ark of God on it. And so they knew that God's hand was behind this. And so this Ark makes its voyage back to the children of Israel, where they now receive it. It's in their possession, and things are better, I guess we could say. Israel still has a lot of learning to do. Upon seeing this ark return, the children of Israel, they take the wood that made up the trailer that the ark was being hauled on, and they built a fire, and they offered the cows, poor cows. Well, that's what a cow does, you know. These cows hauled this ark back to the children of Israel, and they were offered as sacrifice to God. So the children of Israel seem to be back on track in their relationship with God. They're wanting things to be better for them. That they're understanding They're understanding that their relationship with God is not the way it should be. And they have a question to ask. What shall we do with the Ark of God? At first, the Philistines asked this question, and now that question comes full circle back to the children of Israel. And here's actually the sermon this morning. Everything that we've noticed thus far has been a lot of contextual background material. We've dug in a little deeper because we're studying for Bible Bowl. But here's the sermon. Here's the lesson. What are you going to do with God? We mentioned at the beginning of this sermon that this ark represented God's presence. This ark was not a trinket. This ark was what was special because it represented God to the people. Well, now, 2017, now the ark doesn't represent God to us. So we take that part out of it, and the question that lands on our lap this morning is, what are you going to do with God? What are you going to do with God? That's basically what we're analyzing in 1 Samuel chapters 5 and 6. What are you going to do with God? Well, number one, you need to know Him. You need to know God. Part of the whole problem here in this episode in Israel's history is they didn't know God. Later they're going to dethrone God. They're going to get rid of God as their king. The children of Israel are woefully without a knowledge of God. What about you? Do you know God? Do you know God? Really, really know God? How do we know God today? Well, we know God today through His Word. Today, God speaks to us through His Word, the Bible. And that's how we know anything we know about God. Anything necessary and meaningful in our relationship with God, that's how we know about Him, is through His Word. So, what are you doing with that? Are you reading your Bibles? Are you attending worship services like this one that give us a greater opportunity to know God through these acts of worship that He has prescribed, that He wants us to do? Do you know God through other Christians? You know, in John chapter 14, verse 9, Jesus says, "If you have seen Me, you've seen the Father." Well, we Christians are supposed to be like Christ. And if you have in your life a friend or a family member who is a Christian, that Christian shows you Christ. So, who are your friends in real life, online? Who are your friends? Do these friends help you to know the Lord or not? What are you going to do with God? Know Him, number one. Show Him, number two. This world needs the Lord. And you need to take the Lord to this world. The simple fact is nobody else is going to do it. If we Christians don't get up, get off our seats and take the Lord out to this world, it's not going to happen any other way. The devil sure ain't going to do it. The TV's not going to do it. The internet's not going to do it. We're streaming this sermon live over the internet. I'm thankful for that. But the internet is not going to show people the Lord in the way that they need to see Him in order to be saved. That's what you and I have to do. We are the salt of the earth. We are the light of the world. We, secondarily, we're told to go into all the world and teach and preach and let our light shine and show the Lord to people who need Him so, so much. What are you going to do with God? Know Him, show Him. Number three, grow in Him. We can't stay still in our relationship with God. Israel right here, as we kind of jump into this scene of their existence, they're complacent in their relationship with God. They've had the promised land. They've gotten out of Egypt. They're in the promised land now. Things are good. And now they're kind of growing cold in their relationship with God. And they're wanting to be like all the other nations around them. We're going to see that come to a head in chapter 8 when they ask for a king. So Israel is very, very complacent in their relationship with God. They're not looking to get any better. They're fine with good enough. What about you? What are you going to do with God? Don't become complacent in your relationship with Him. Sure, you've heard, believed, repented, confessed, been baptized. Maybe you've done that many years ago. And since then, you've just kind of been hanging out. Not growing, really. You haven't left the church. That's great. I mean that sincerely. That's great that you haven't left the church. Some have. Look around. We know some have left the church. You have not left the church. You have heard, believed, repented, confessed, and been baptized. Outstanding. But you have to grow. You have to grow. If you're the same Christian that you were this time last year, uh-oh. If your family is roughly the same Christian family that it was last year, uh-oh. Because we've had a whole year since last year. And that gives us an opportunity to grow. I want to remind you again that the Philistines said, "Do not send the ark of God back empty," chapter 6, verse 3. Let that be a devotional thought for you this week. Don't send back the ark of God empty. They wanted this heathen nation, mind you, they wanted God to know that they cared. This heathen nation whose thoughts were nowhere even close to what they needed to be. This heathen Philistine nation, they wanted God to be honored. What about you? What are you going to do with God? Know Him, show Him, grow in Him, and do it fast, because time is ticking. And the Lord is coming again. This morning, if you need to improve your relationship with God, I urge you, beg with you, think about how you need to do that. And if we can be a part of that solution in any way, we're here for you to help out. We've talked about hearing, believing, repenting, confessing, and being baptized. If you're ready to take those steps, we are more than ready for you to take those steps. We've also talked about already doing that and having been a Christian for a long time. If that's you this morning, we've got an invitation for you as well, because you need to make sure that your relationship with God is sharp. Make sure that it's what it needs to be. Make sure that it's excellent. Make sure that you're striving for that elite relationship with God that we're talking about being in leadership class on Sunday mornings. Make sure that's you. Make sure you are knowing God. You are showing God. You are growing, really growing in the Lord. And if your relationship with God has cooled off, like Israel's had in 1 Samuel chapter 5 and 6, let us help you with that. We would love to help. While we stand and sing, won't you come, please?
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.